We're holding on page 58 in Yuma, about the middle of the page, in my copy. There's two dots there. It's the early in Os Samachay. We learned yesterday, we started talking about the mon, because the pasuk says that Hashem gave you the man on Esecha, and you have Vayancha, Vayaribecha, and that the Gemara was discussing in connection with the whole discussion of what Inui of Yom Kippur consists of, where this is one of the places we learn that Inui includes not Inui. So then we started talking about that a person sometimes enjoys the sight of something more than the actual experience of it. So now, in that connection, then we learned to machlokas from Ami and Rabasi, why is it that eating the mon itself was considered an inui? Is it because they couldn't, because they didn't have the satisfaction of knowing that they have food from one day to the next? Or is it because they didn't have the satisfaction of actually seeing what they're eating, because the mon would still look like mon? It would just, as we'll learn later on, it would taste like everything, or almost everything, but it would still look like mon. Anyway, so now the Gemara brings a couple of other psukim where Rav Ami and Rav Asi also argue on the meaning of the pasuk. The first one is a pasuk from Mishlei. The pasuk starts by saying, "Don't look at wine, don't admire wine that's red and think I'm gonna drink it." The pasuk continues, "Ki yitin b'kos einoi." When a person puts his eye and his attention on the cup of wine, yishalech b'meisharim, he's gonna go in a straight path. So Rav Ami and Rav Asi, they argued, what does this mean? Chadama, one of them says, "Kol anosin eino b'kosei." And a person who puts his eye on his cup, he loves to drink and get drunk. Kola olam kula jomer olav kemishur. The entire world seems to him like a straight path, like flatland, meaning Rashi says he thinks that everybody's mammon is available for him to take. He loses his inhibitions because he's drinking, and therefore he thinks he can take mammon from anybody that he wants. Marsha says something a little different. Also, the vote is that so eventually he gets drunk regularly, therefore he ends up using his own money, and he still wants to be able to keep his habits as far as what he eats and so forth, and therefore he ends up stealing and taking from other people. Marshall also suggests that maybe in the drosha the word is not bekoisoi but rather bekisoi, meaning that a person is stingy and doesn't want to spend his own money, so then he ends up wanting to take money from other people to satisfy his habits. So that's one explanation. But Chad Omer, but Iyun Yaakov says it's kind of a more balabatish way of understanding it also. You know, when you're walking on flat lands, you don't have to worry that you're going to trip on anything. When you're walking on hilly land, hilly ground or whatever, then you have to be more careful where you step. Well, like this, a person who's drunk doesn't realize how many obstacles there are out there. He imagines that he's walking on flat land and he can just walk however he wants, and he doesn't realize that he's prone to trip and fall. Yeah. That's true. V'chad Omer, the other one between Rav Ami and Rav Asi, explains, Kol HaMnosin Eina B'Koisei, not so much Kol HaOlam Kula, but Kol HaArayas Domesol of Commissioner. All Arayas seem to him like flat land, meaning, in other words, he loses his inhibitions as far as Arayas specifically. So one of them is saying he loses his inhibitions as far as other people's money, and the other one is saying that he loses his inhibitions as far as Arayas. So that would be, in other words, again, when he gets drunk, then that lowers a person's inhibitions. Now there are things that normally, under normal circumstances, he would never do, but now when he's in his cups, then yeah. Another pasuk where they argued on the meaning of it. The pasuk says, "Da'oga b'lev ish yashchen." Now, when a person has a worry in his heart, yashchena. Now, the simple meaning of the pasuk, Mefoshim explained over there, yashchena is meloshin shocha, like it bows him down, it bends him down. But on the other hand, Shlomo HaMelech is trying to give us advice over here in Mishlei of what to do about it. So what's the advice in that it bows you down? So Rav Ami and Rav Asi, Chad Omer Yisichena Midaitei. One of them says it means he should distract himself from it. He shouldn't think about it. V'chad Omer Yisichena L'Acher. And the other one says it means that he should speak it out to other people. And that way, a number of things are accomplished by that. Rashi points out that the other people will give him advice, can give him advice how to get out of it. Yad Yosef over here brings from the Aruch. This way, the other people can daven to Hashem on his behalf. And in fact, the Sfas Emes adds a point to that. When you have, and this is b'chlal, an important point in the whole concept of Avos Yisrael and davening on behalf of a fellow Yid, the The Sfas Emes gives an interesting explanation. Though the Eivishter, we know, one way that we can contrast the din of the Eivishter with the din of Bos of Adam, you have, for example, a person who needs to be punished by Beis Din, or Lahavdil, by a secular court. They can take into consideration what he did wrong, and therefore what punishment he deserves for it. They can't possibly take into consideration all the effect that it's going to have on everybody who knows him and all his family and friends and everything, because then it would be impossible to do anything. The Eivishter is not like that. He's able to keep all that in mind as well. So he explains, when you have a person where other people feel his tsar and are troubled by the fact that he's in trouble and he's in pain as well, the Eivishter may decide, you know what, those people, fine, this person maybe deserves such and such punishment, but those people don't deserve to have that tsar, and therefore that helps him out. So in that sense, then you see Chen Alachin, he tells it over to other people, and therefore then that, that helps him out. You have, in fact, the vote in Hayom Yom that may tie in with this as well, where one of the Rebbeim explained that the Acherim over here just means they're physically separate people, but they're at one with him as far as their mentality, as far as their Avos Yisrael, as far as that they can talk and put themselves in his shoes and give him the advice and help him out of the situation. And another pasuk where Rav Ami and Rav Asi argued about the Yom Yaakov points out, and now on the face of it, all of these drushes, the Gemara is just bringing them one after the other because they're all psukim where Rav Ami and Rav Asi argued about the meaning of them. Yom Yaakov points out there may be a connection between this one and the previous one about getting drunk. A person is going to think, I have such tzaris, what else can I do but to drink my tzaris away? So we tell him, no, you have better alternatives. Next, another one, the pasuk says about the snake, the nachash ofer lachma. The Navi is talking about how it's going to be l'osid lavo. He's describing over there all the animals and everybody will live at peace. And he describes the snake, the snake's food will be dust. Now, we already have that in the Torah, of course, in Parshas Bereishis. But Marshall points out there it's a curse for him. So there you could say that maybe what it means is that the Eivishter is cursing him, and that the only food he's going to be able to find all the time is dust, but maybe they'll still be able to eat other food and enjoy it as well. But now when you have the Navi saying as a fact the Nachash Ofer Lachma, then we understand there's a deeper meaning. So Rav Ami Rabasi, Chad Amar Afilo Oichol Kama Danei Olam, even if a snake eats all the delicacies in the world, Toyim Behem Tam Ofer, all he tastes in them is the taste of dust. So he has no hana from the various foods and delicacies that he eats. But Chad Omer, the other one, says, Afilo Oichol Kama Adane Olam. What it means is, even if a snake eats any delicacy in the world, Ein Daiti Miskareres, or Miyosheves, he doesn't feel at ease, or he doesn't feel calm, Ad Sheyoichol Ofer, unless he eats dust. That's the only thing that puts his mind at ease. The Lashon Daita Miskareres means literally to cool down his das, implying that until then he's angry. And Ben Yehoyada says, in fact, the snake is. A snake is a naturally angry creature because he's angry about what happened as a result of the Chetei Zadas that he lost so much of what he would have had before. So therefore, what calms him down, what puts him at ease, according to this Manda Omer, is eating dust. Tanya, and we learn in a Braise in this connection about the snake and dust. Come and look, even when the Eivishter punishes, his midah is not like the midah of human beings. Midas bos of adam, maknit es chavere. If one person angers or upsets the other one, yered imay ad l'chayev, then the one who was insulted is going to try in every possible way to get the other guy upset and harass him and interfere with him or whatever. There's even, by the way, there's a Gemara, this expression, Yored Yimel Chayav, is mentioned in a few places in Gemara as this kind of thing. Somebody, one person upsets the other and the other one is Yored Yimel Chayav. Here, Rashi just says, it means that he tries to harass him and then ruin him in whatever way he can. There's a couple of other places. There's another place where Rashi explains, it means like he'll even beat him and whatever. And then there's a Tosfos in Bava Metzia that said, that brings from, I think, from one of the Gaonim, that says, in a certain case, Mutter Lissrif Shlu, he's allowed to burn one third of the guy's brain, and Tosfos wonders where on earth did you get that from. Anyway, the point is that usually, boss of a dumb, then he's been insulted, he's been wrong, so then he's going to, even though we know, okay, the Torah says lo sitim, lo sitim, but still it's a natural tendency, and sometimes he's even allowed, api alocha, to actually go and harass the guy and interfere with him and whatever. Certainly, he's not going to do him any kind of chesed. Avla kodesh bochu, in a cane, but the Eivishter is not like that. you see that look what happened with all of the each time the Eibishter cursed something, kilulas hanochash. So he cursed the snake after the chetetz adas, and yet the snake actually gets something good out of it. What does he curse? That he eats dust. Gag. So if he goes up onto the roof, there's always food over there because there's always dust on the roof. Yerdet lakarke, he goes down onto the ground. Wherever he goes, he can always find food to eat. So it's an idea, in other words, that beroyd is rachem tizker, that even when the Eibishter is punishing, there's still rachmanos involved. Then Yehoyada points out an interesting point in it. He says that now you do actually have Tosfos Yeshanim. First of all, actually points out on this Gemara, he brings there is a Medrash actually that says that maybe not quite so much, because the Medrash says it's not just any old kind of dirt that the snake can eat and be satisfied. There's only a particular kind of dirt, like it has to dig for it or something. So according to that Medrash, it comes out not like our Gemara. It's not necessarily so easy for the snake to find the kind of dirt that will be best for it. Anyway, on the more simple level, one was saying over here in the Gemara that it finds its food wherever it goes. So the Ben Yehoyada points out, after all, the Eibishter, we know the Eibishter punishes Mida Keneged Mida. So why does he make the snake eat dust? Because he caused that Adam and Chava over to die, or for Atavel, or for Toshuv, so therefore he has to eat dust. Now, you could look at it another way. You could say that he spilled the blood of Adam and Chava. Therefore, the Eibishter might have made it that a snake has to eat blood. But then he'd be able to find that. So instead, the Eibishter chose a different Midah Keneged Midah, one that makes it easier on the snake, where he can find his food wherever he goes. With that said, by the way, there is a vort that's brought in Sfarim, that there is, on the other hand, it's like the Eibishter is saying, all other creatures have to go through a certain tircha to get their food. You, the snake, I don't even want to hear from it. That makes him daven, like we're saying daven. You, the snake, I don't even want to hear from. I'll just give you your food wherever you want, and just stay out of my way. Kilos Knan, the Eibishter through Noyach cursed Knan, and what is his curse? Evad avodim yilechav. What is the result? Oichol mashir rabbi oichol v'shoyse mashir rabbi shoyse. He eats from whatever his master eats. He drinks from whatever his master drinks. In other words, so again, Ben Yehoyada says again, the vort is the Eibishter could have made. For example, his punishment should have been that the descendants of Canaan should always be poor. Instead, the Eibishter chose a different, appropriate midah keneged midah in such a way that they always have their sustenance available to them. Technically, Marashah points out, by the way, there is a machloikus in various places in Shas, whether, when it comes to an Eved Knani, does a master have the right to say to the Eved, Asei imi ve'eni zonach? Can he say to the Eved Knani, you have to work for me, but I'm not obligated to support you, you go and beg for a living? There's a machloikus in a few places in Shas, whether you're allowed to do that. The halacha is he is allowed to do that. Because after all, Jews have a mitzvah to support the Avodim Knanim, given that an Eved Knani is on his way to being a Jew, kind of, he's chayv in some mitzvahs, then therefore Jews have an obligation to support him with tzedakah, just like a regular yid. So that being the case, Marashah says, evidently, all Gemara would have to go according to the opinion that a master can't say that he does have to support his Eved, no matter what. Ion Yaakov points out another factor in it as well, that when this curse was originally given, there were no Jews yet. Everybody was Bnei Noach, by definition. So they, and by Bnei Noach, you don't have that concept of that anybody could say, Asei mi ve'en ezonach. Avas Esan, in the corner over here, points out yet another point. Rabbi Yossi is the one saying this over here, that mentioned this, Shaloi Kemidas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Midas Vosev Adam. Based on something that he says in Brachas, you can learn that he would say that an Eved is that an Eved may be self-supporting, is not going to be self-supporting. I mean, Nanami Gia, he earns his keep by working for his master, meaning, in other words, that his master is required to support him. So then that would fit with what we're saying over here. Anyway, another example. Kilala Seisha, Hashem cursed the woman after the Chetetz Adas, I called Rotzin Achareha. And what is the result? Everybody's always running to, all men are attracted to women. So in other words, Marashah says, even though part of her curse was Tumas Nida and the pain of childbirth, that doesn't cause men to want to stay away from women, Adrabah, they're more attracted to them. Ben Yehoyada says, here also you have the point of the bracha, and it is like this. Fine, the Eibishter had to make that the Eibishter wanted to make that she's going to suffer a loss of blood. It could have been, for example, that every month she'll have a nosebleed. What would be the result? That wouldn't require her to separate from her husband. Instead, the Ebbe should arrange it in just such a way that there's a Tumas Nida, where therefore the husband and wife have to be separate for a certain amount of time every month. And then, as the Gemara tells us in Nida, when they come back together after she goes to the mikveh, then they feel like they're in a new honeymoon all over again, as though like they're making a fresh start, and they have such a taiva and a chiba for one another. So therefore, the Ebbe should arrange it in just that way. And the last example, Kilolas Adama, the Eibush to curse the ground after you have a few times, actually. First, you have the ground disobeyed the Eibush by not putting out trees that Tam Eitzir period of Shava. Afterward, by the Chet Eitzadas, the Eibush to cursed and said that the ground, the Kurtz Vidauda Tatsniach Loch, the ground is going to produce thorns and thistles and things like that. And then you have after Kayim with Hevel also. Anyway, Akon Nizon in Hemena. And what happens? Everybody is sustained by what grows from the ground. So here also, so what's the vort? Ben Yehoyada says the Eibushter could have made it, for example, that the only thing that will grow from the ground will be trees. Instead, the Eibushter chose to make what's going to grow from the ground. We're saying the coats for Daudar. First of all, those themselves include plants that you can eat, for example, things like artichokes and things like that, the Medrash mentions. But second of all, it also means, you have grain and vegetables and things like that also grow directly from the ground, and everybody lives off those. Now let's get back to talking about the mon, or actually, before we talk about the mon, first the Gemara is going to focus on when we find later on that the Jewish people were complaining about it. Maybe this also connects with what we mentioned before about Arayas, and here the Gemara is going to mention Arayas in this connection as well. The Pasuk says, Zacharnus adogash anecho b'mitzrayim chidon. The Jewish people are complaining. In Parshas Baalosa, we remember the fish that we ate in Mitzrayim for free. So, as Rashi points out on the Pasuk over there, if the Mitzrayim weren't even giving them straw, they're certainly not going to give them fish. So what's this, what are they complaining about? Rav and Shmuel, so Rav and Shmuel argue what the complaint was. Chadam adogim b'chadam arayas. One of them says exactly that. They're complaining that they don't have the fish, that they miss the fish that they used to have. And the other one says they miss the arayas that they were able to, to be with before. Rashi points out, you have a pasuk of Yid Gula Roiv, so we see that Doga can be associated with fertility. So Manda Amad Dogim Dachsiv Neuchal, the pasuk says that we ate, and therefore, so that means fish that they actually ate. Manda Amar Rayas Dachsiv Chinam, the one that says Arayas focuses on the fact that the pasuk says Chinam, and that means, so what does it mean over here? Marashur explains like this. When you're able to marry relatives, then there would be a greater chance for period of Arivia. You have more of a pool of people that you can marry. So they were upset that now that pool is restricted to them. In fact, an interesting question, Bechlal, is why they're all of a sudden complaining about this now in Parshas Baal Oyscha. A number of Mephoshim asked the question, Arayas were already usher from when the Torah was given, which was about a year earlier. So why are they first complaining about it now? And there are a few explanations. Among them are, Marshall gives an explanation based on what the Gemara continues over here and says that the mon would help clarify whose parents clarify cases of Znus or Arayas or whatever. So now that they have the mon doing that, then they're complaining about it. The Sifseh Chum on the Pasuk mentions another point, that when did they start complaining? Not long after the Eibushter had given the instructions in Parshas Bamidbar about how to set up Machne Yisrael. So up until then, everybody was just living indiscriminately, one next to the other, however they felt like. So you have a much larger pool of potential shidduchim that you're living near them. Now that everybody has to live within their shevet, then now you have a now it becomes a lot harder to find a shidduch that you're not gonna end up with Arayas, and therefore they're complaining. Anyway, Marshall also adds the point. So why are Arayas described as chinam? Because what happens when you want to make a shidduch? There has to be money involved. On the other hand, if you're going to marry a close relative, well then your mechotonim are going to be yourself. Well then you don't need money, and then you don't need money so much. So therefore, so that in that sense, it can be called chinam. It's something that you can get for free. So the Gemara says b'shleim l'man d'omer dogim hainu d'omer neuchal. Okay, well then in that case, so since the pasuk says that they ate, then yeah, we can see they're complaining about fish. Elo l'man d'omer arayas my hoksiv neuchal. What is the man d'omer who says they were complaining about arayas? What does he do with the pasuk that they're saying that we remember the fish asher neuchal? And the answer is lishna mal yenokat. The answer is the word neuchal is meant as a euphemism. Dichtiv, and we actually find the word achila used in connection with tashmish. Dichtiv, you have a pasuk in Mishlei, kein derech isha min ha'ofes. This is how a woman who commits niyuf, who commits adultery, does. Ochla, she eats. Umachasapia, and she wipes off her mouth. Vamra, like pal the oven, and she says, I didn't do anything wrong. Where the eating refers to tashmish, and wiping off her mouth refers to wiping off oisimachim. So we see that tashmish can be described as eating. You have other examples of it as well. There's a Mishnah in Ksuvos that mentions about a couple where you may have the husband is out of town all week working or something like that. It's expected they're going to eat together every Friday night. And the Gemara brings one opinion that eating together means that that's their expected time for Tashmish. So again, now the other way around. If you say it means arayas, then that explains the chinam. Like Marsha said, because when it comes to, if you're going to marry a close relative, you don't necessarily need a big nadin or anything like of that. But if it's fish, then what's the chinam? How are they getting fish for free? And the answer is, as a matter of fact, yes, in Mitzrayim, they were finding fish and bringing them from Hefker. As we learn in Sota, when the Jewish women were drawing water in Mitzrayim, Hashem would arrange that there would be small fish that they'd draw in their jugs as well, and then that way they were able to bring fresh water as well as fish to their husbands out in the fields, and so on and so forth. So we see that yes, they were in fact getting fish for free, and now in the midbar they're complaining they don't have any of that. Eitz Yosef, by the way, points out another point over here also. The word noifal is in future tense. Now, if it's just referring to what they ate in Mitzrayim, then they should be saying asher achalnu. So he says what it means is also you have to consider, we learned yesterday and we're going to learn later on in the Sugya, that after all, one point was because you couldn't keep mun from one day to the next. That made people always on edge, on tenterhooks, is there going to be mun tomorrow? So therefore they're saying we don't even have asher noichal, we don't have anything that we know we can for sure eat tomorrow because we never know whether tomorrow we're going to have what to eat. So the Gemara continues, B'shleim l'manda om adogim. Now, it works out well according to the opinion that they were complaining that they didn't have fish, which means aval arayas like pautzi bahu, which means that they had never been promiscuous when it comes to arayas, and therefore they're not complaining about the fact that they can't do that. That explains the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, gan no lachosi kala, v'goyim Hashem praises the Jewish people, my kala is like a locked garden. And the pasuk continues. The Gemara quotes the continuation of the pasuk is a gal nol, a locked up spring, mayan chosum, a sealed fountain. So we see, in other words, that they were careful about who they're marrying and who they're having relations with. But if you're saying that until now they were doing arayas and now they're complaining that that's also to them, then why is the pasuk praises them? Why is the pasuk praising them? What praise do they deserve if until now they've been doing arayas? And the answer is bahanach da'asira bahu like pautzi bahu. Meaning the ones they were also with until now, they were not careless with those. And thus the pasuk says, a closed up garden, they would not be reckless or careless when it comes to an eishes ish. Now you have, when it comes to bnei noyach, there's only a very limited number of arayas that are also to bnei noyach. The general rule that the Rashi brings from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the general rule is any arayas that are chayav misas based in by Jews, then bnei noyach are also in them. So any ones that are only chayav koris by Jews, bnei noyach are mutter. So eishes ish is one of the ones that's chayav misa, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do a couple of the other ones as well that are chayav misa among Jews. A son and his mother, for example, and some other examples, but all the other ones, Hashem still praises them, or the other girsa, Mayim Chosim, Hanach Dasun, like Pritzi Bahu, since the pasuk compares them to a sealed up fountain, the point is that they would keep away from the ones they're also to. So it means they wouldn't be involved with the goites, or with the goyim and the goites of Mitzrayim. It means they wouldn't be involved with the relatives that are also to Bnei Noyach and with Eishes Ish, but they still had many other arayas that were mutter to them as Bnei Noyach. You have one example is, after all, Moshe Rabbeinu's own parents are an example of that. After all, Amram and Yecheved are nephew and aunt. That's also after the Torah is given. So this is the kind of thing. They were doing that in Mitzrayim, and now that it's also to them, then they were complaining. Next, Vishleim Lamanda Omer Arayas. I understand, according to the opinion, that they were complaining about Arayas. That's what it says. A couple of psukim later, by Yishma Moshe Esam Boichel Mishpachoisav. Moshe heard the people crying by their families, which means Al Iske Mishpachoisav means they're complaining about matters involving their families. Shenesu Lahem Lishkav Etzlam, where now they're also to lie with and to have relations with their families. In other words, the Gemara is the simple meaning of the Mishpachoisav is just they're standing there family by family and crying. But the Gemara is doubting, first of all, there's no particular reason to mention that. Second of all, there's also, if, for example, it just meant that they're standing there by families, then it would have phrased it differently. By Yishma Moshe Sa'am, L'Mishpachoisav Boicha, or something like that, which would imply that they're standing there family by family and crying. But now when it says L'mishpachoisav after the boicha, then we understand that it means that they're crying about something involving their families. So Elo Lamando Omer Dogim, but if you say they're only complaining about fish, my vayishma moshe has the unboicha L'mishpachoisav, then what exactly, what's the L'mishpachoisav? And the answer is, according to that opinion, ha v'ha ha'boi, b'hu, in fact, according to that opinion, they were complaining about both. They tackle work, according to the opinion, that's Arias, according to the opinion that it was fish, agrees they were also complaining about Arias. So you have one opinion says it was both, and the other one says they were only complaining about, and the other one says only about Arias. Now, here's where Marsha brings the point about why they weren't bothered by that all this time, and here's where Marsha explains, since the Gemara explains later on that depending where the mon fell for a given person, you could tell that you have, for example, the Gemara is going to point out soon, you have a case, for example, where Yibum was done within 3 months after the brother passed away. And now you don't know if the baby is from the first brother or the second, then it would be clarified by the mon. So now, and similar other examples like that. So now you had a clarification that's able to happen through the mon that never happened before in matters of Arayas. Now it tells us who's an Isser Erva and who's not. And therefore that's one reason why the Jewish people were complaining about it. Next, they continue. They're saying that they're complaining. We remember, besides the fish they mentioned, Esakishuim, we remember the cucumbers, Vesavatichim, and the watermelons, Vesachotzer, and leeks, Vesabtsolim, and the onions, Vesashumim, and the garlic, that they're complaining they don't have in the Midbar. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, there's an interesting story, I think, in the Sefer Tzur Hamor. He says that a Goyish king once asked one of the Chachamim, he says, how ungrateful of the Jews. The Eibishter is giving them this amazing food, the mon. It can taste like anything, as the Gemara is going to go on to say. He's showering them with goodness in the Midbar. And they're complaining because they don't have onions and garlic. What kind of ingrates are we talking about over here? So the Chacham says to him, I'll give you an answer tomorrow. The next day, that he goes over to the cooks in the palace and he tells them that this Chacham was actually, he's the king's doctor. He was the king's doctor and the king used to talk things in Torah with him. So he goes over to the cooks in the palace, the kitchen staff. He tells them, I'm putting the king on a new diet for his health. Tomorrow, don't put any onions or garlic in his food. And the next day, the king tastes the food and it's very bland. And he calls over the head cook and asks them what's going on. And he tells him the doctor said. And then he calls in the doctor and starts complaining. And the yid says, you see, you're complaining only about missing them for one day. Imagine they're missing them for 40 years. Don't they have a shtickle right to complain? And the king has to agree that he has a valid point. So what's going on with these five things? So Rab Ami and Rab Asi, again, Rab Ami and Rab Asi argue what exactly the complaint was about these five. With every other kind of food, they could taste the taste of them in the mon. With those five, the mon would not taste like them. Because Rashi points out over here and also on the pasuk, those are bad for pregnant women and for nursing women. So they didn't have it. There's a sikha actually where the Rebbe talks about, so what, because of pregnant women and the nursing women, everybody's going to lose out on it? And the answer is basically that this is a matter of showing the Avas Yisrael, the concern that one yid has to have for another, because of the concern that it might harm them, then yes, every yid is expected to forego it so that the pregnant and nursing women don't have to feel that they're missing out on something that everybody else has.
It hurts the nursing women and the baby, or just the nursing women?
That I don't know, but Rashi just mentions, brings from Sifri, like you tell a pregnant, well, the expression in Rashi is, they tell pregnant women, don't eat onions because of the baby. So I guess the implication is it's bad for the baby as well.
The mommy eats the baby, yes.
Yeah, it's no good
for mommy, it's no good for the baby.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, in any case, so according to that mandama, then it wouldn't taste like any of these things. But Chadama, the other opinion, is kolam minim kolam, tam or taim on a mamashan, where the difference is everything else, not only they tasted the taste, but they also had the texture of the food. But oisan, chameshas aminim, these five, taim on v'loim mamashan, they had the taste of it, they just didn't have the texture of it, and that's what they're complaining about. As we learned yesterday, after all, a person has the most enjoyment from their food when they can see it and hear, where they couldn't even see and they couldn't even feel that it tastes like it, then they had a complaint that it's not what they want. One of the Mephoshim points out, when you get down to it, that may go together with what we were saying about the fish. They're complaining, Eitz Yosef points it out over here, that we had fish, but we could season them with these kinds of things. Now we have no fish and we have none of these seasonings. Okay. Onward. Now, the Pasuk says about the Mon, Vohu Kizra Gad Lov. You actually have first in Parshas B'Shalach when the Mon first starts falling, and again in Parshas B'Haloscha when it tells after the Jewish people are complaining when it starts describing what the Mon was actually like. So it describes in both places, it describes that the Mon was like Zera Gad Lov. So what does that mean? The problem with that is, Zera Gad is coriander seed. Now, coriander seed is not white. So how can you describe the mon as like white coriander seed? So Amrab Asi, Amrab Yechanan, Ogo Kagiga, it means it was round in the shape of coriander seeds. The loven Kamar Golis, but it was white like pearls. So the comparison to Zera Gad, so to coriander, is only as far as the shape, but not as far as the color.
What is coriander nowadays?
It's a plant. I mean, you can find it in the spice rack in the store. They have two different things of it. You have coriander, and you also have it's a flavor. And yeah, and the seeds versus the leaves of it. They're both used. The leaves are generally called cilantro. You can find cilantro. Yeah, so you can find cilantro in the store. You can find coriander in the store. Okay. Other opinions. Tana Rabbanan, God. Another meaning of that is kizera God. Doimel zera pishtan begivolim. It resembled flax seeds when they're in their pods, which also the pods that flax seeds grow in are also round. So it can be compared to that as well. The Chum say a different meaning of Zera Gad. Gad, it's called that because Doim al Divrei Agoda Hamosh Chum Libeshal Adam Kamayim. The Mon was like words of Agoda, which draw a person's heart and which interests a person, and he's interested in hearing it like water. So therefore, in that sense, the mon was very attractive to a person. So now, Marshall says, in that case, the word lovon would be meloshen leiv, that agada draws in a person, and now once a person hears agada, then he's more interested in learning other parts of Torah as well. The same way, the mon would stimulate a person's appetite, because like we said before, you could taste all or almost all the tastes in it, so therefore it would stimulate a person's appetite. You have the expression, Marsha brings from a Gemara elsewhere, Rav Chalav Simashriach, there's always room for good food. So therefore, so since the mon tasted like all the good foods, then therefore they always had an appetite for it. By the way, you find later on, you know, here we're saying in the Midbar, they complained about it a few times, but eventually when they came into Eretz Yisrael, we know the mon stopped falling on the day Moshe passed away, and then they had 5 weeks supply of it, and they finished eating it only on the second day Pesach. So Rashi mentions over there, it was so chaviv to them, they didn't want to give it up so easily. When the Pasuk says over there, they started eating from the grain of the land because they had no more mon. The point is, if they had any more mon, they would have continued eating it, but they ran out, so they had no choice but to make do with, the grain of Eretz Yisrael. So we see that eventually they came to like it. Anyway. The Tanya Idach, now another Braisa explains another reason why it's called Zera Gad, Gad Shoyim Magid Lahem Yisrael, in Ben Teskarush and in Ben Zayim Lachem. It was also, it would tell, the mon would tell whether a baby was, whether a baby was a 9-month baby from a woman's first husband or a 7-month baby from a woman's second husband. Suppose there had been, for example, a matter of Yibum within 3 months, or a woman's husband had died and she remarried, whatever the case, there was a remarriage within 3 months after widowhood or divorce, and you always have, now later on, you have in halacha, you have a suffix, because of that suffix is why you have a takana that a woman, taka, is not allowed to get married within 3 months, but later on, So they made that takana at some later point. At this point, they didn't necessarily have that takana yet. So therefore, the mon would help clarify things. And in that sense, so gad meloshin magid. And in that case, actually, kizera gad, Marsha points out, then it means that it would speak out the zera. It would speak out whose child is this by, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, depending whose tent it fell by. Tanya, and the Lavan, why is it called Lavan? Shemalbin Avanesein Shor Yisrael, because it would clean up and whiten the Averus of the Jewish people. Rashi explains, because since everybody had to be worried on a day-to-day basis, is there going to be mon tomorrow, that helped them develop that bitochen in the Eidishter that we talked about yesterday, and they, which was, the Gemara points out later on in the Sugya, that was exactly the reason why the Eidishter did it that way, and so therefore it helped clean up their Averus and help them develop that sense of total reliance on Hashem. Marsha says differently. The whole point, what do you have? Why do you need these three chodshei avchana? What's the problem whether a baby belongs to one father or to a different one? Is because then you may have problems of arayas with it. Well, since the mon would clarify who is whose child, then that cleaned up that avera so that they're not going to end up accidentally marrying an erva. And then, like Marsha said before, that's exactly why, though, some people were complaining about it, because that helps make things too clear. Worth mentioning in this connection, by the way, a different point that's brought. You know, we know, for example, there's a lot of things about the mon. We know the Gemara mentioned some of them later on in the Sugya, that for tzaddikim it would fall near their tent, and for beninim further out, and for the shoyim even further out. For tzaddikim it was ready to eat, for beninim less so, and for the shoyim they had to put a lot of effort into it. So the mon was like a daily barometer of where you're standing, or of where you're standing in avodah, where you're standing in your relationship with the Eidishter. And some people didn't like having that immediate feedback, and that's part of what they're complaining about. Yeah, too scary, right? So for a person to be confronted with where they're actually standing, yeah. Some people found that too difficult to live with. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Gola, Test Tavis. Every person knows, as we were just talking about, a person knows for himself what his maimon u'matzav is. He may not have the mon to show him to show everybody else, but a person, if he thinks into it, will realize where he stands. A person realizes that there are things within him that need to be corrected. Still, that doesn't contradict what Nesi Dereinu, what the Friedrich Rebbe and the Rebbe said that the Avodah is already completed and we're all ready to greet Mashiach Tzidkenu, because the Avodah of Klolus Bnei Yisrael, of the Jewish people at large, is already finished and all is completed. There's really no explanation, there's no valid reason why the Geula is being delayed. That is there. So actually,
2 years later, I'm still waiting for an answer myself.
We may as well learn tomorrow is Yom Yom Mashiach Gola as well in this connection, since we don't have a shiur tomorrow night after all. It's about Asara B'Tavis. The Pnimius, the Tainus, is a Yom Rotzen Lashem, where this is the on a day like that we have the inner good core of this seemingly negative thing that happened, the seemingly negative event because of which we're fasting. On a Tainus, we have that the goodness of that, the inner goodness of that is revealed. The Pnimius, the Ava that the Eidishter has for every year, like the Alter Rebbe in Tanya, like a marshal of a thing who personally washes off the filth off his Ben Yochid, because he loves him so much, as we will see it by the Golam Mitzvah Shlema. We'll see that openly as the Rambam gives the Psak Halacha that all these fasts will be bottled in Moshe Mashiach, and in fact there'll be Yom Tovim and Yumei Sos and the Simcha, as the Pasuk says that they'll all become L'Sos and L'Simcha L'Moedim Tovim V'Emes V'Shalom Ahavu. There's a, in that connection, there's a sicha in Chelik Tesvav, actually one of this week's projects, the sichas, where the Rebbe analyzes that whole point in great detail and talks about the point, but there's really three different levels in it. There's where the tzom is bottle, where it's not a fast day anymore. There's where it becomes a day of sus and masimcha. And then there's where the whole concept of tzom and the whole concept of golos itself becomes something of sus and masimcha. And then Rebbe analyzes that at great length and connects it with our parasha and so on and so forth. Okay. Halachas, we were talking about where a person makes a mistake and then says the wrong middle brachas in Shemoneh Esrei on Shabbos. Now, so we talked about Shachos, we talked about Ma'ariv and Shachos and Mincha, where what the rules are when you have to continue with the bracha that you're in the middle of when you're able to continue with the bracha of Shabbos. On the other hand, in Musaf, if you start saying the weekday brachas, then you break off even in the middle of a bracha and start the bracha from Musaf. Because by Musaf, because what did we say? By the other tefillas, in principle, you should have had to say a full Shemoneh Esrei of 19 brachas, but the Chum didn't want to be matriach you. But by Musaf, you don't have that. The whole point of davening Musaf is to remember the Korbanos Musaf of Shabbos, and there's no business over there at all for the weekday brachas. So there's no reason to continue and finish off the bracha that you started at all. Now, one more thing in this connection is that if a person mistakenly starts the tefillah of Chol on Shabbos, then it's not such a good simon for him. So then a person should start thinking into what he's doing throughout the next week and do tshuva.